Atheist Nomads episode 166, news for September 28, 2016.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Wesley is tied up at work. And we already tried rescheduling and we're on day two and he's still stuck at work, so...
It's been rough for him.
Yeah, episode needs to get... I need to get it out tonight, so yeah, we can't wait any longer. But Lauren is joining me.
I'm here!
So this past weekend...
Oh, wait. Hello, No. It's not the same. Okay.
This past weekend, we did the Light the Night Streamathon.
Oh my God, streaming.
It was so much fun.
For 12 hours.
Yeah, it was a little insane, because... Well,
not me. I lasted about, what, 10 hours? 9 hours?
You made it 9 hours.
Okay, I made it 9 hours, and I went to bed. I'm like, screw you, sucker.
I made it 12 hours plus a couple hours of setting up beforehand, and I was running 3 computers doing it, which was crazy.
The words mic and mouse became... It was hilarious.
It would have been easier to run the streamathon and 3 systems if it hadn't been for the 10 beers and then the tequila.
Right, because when you do a streamathon, you have to drink. It's like a rule.
Well, for me, if I'm recording, I have to drink.
That's you have a rule. Problem. You have a podcast problem.
I've recorded without drinking once, and that was for Sam's show because it was on the radio, and the FCC doesn't allow drinking on the radio. So I had to be sober for that one. It was weird. But anyway, the streamathon, it was a lot of fun. We had people throughout the entire time. Sam and Becky from Ask an Atheist really helped us out a lot. Meredith even got on camera a little bit towards the end. The video,
sweet Meredith.
The video is all still up on YouTube, and some of it, of the audio, may be shared with you. And we'll most likely all be going to the patrons here soon.
Bonus content!
But we raised over $550.
Yay!
Which is awesome.
Yeah, that was, like, considering we had a bunch of, you know, just not big names, but... We had a lot of people, and God, people really came out and supported it. It was awesome.
Yeah, there was actually people watching the stream at all times.
Yeah, we always had at least one viewer.
Awesome. It was usually more than one, but the videos have had a lot more views by now. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. I recommend taking a look because it was fun.
Especially towards the end, right about the 6 p.m. mark, when Justin was smashed and had to produce, and oh God, it was so funny.
The start of the second one, I was having problems. It was rough.
That's right. The beginning of the second video. Oh my God, it was awesome. Anyway, yeah. It was for Light the Night, which is something that Dustin's been supporting for several years now.
It was 2012 was the first year, and yeah, Lauren's been involved for the last several, and it's really cool. We get to help raise money to help fight blood cancer, and they're actually happy to work with atheists. The first
Unlike
couple of years
some people
yeah the first 2 years that the United Coalition of Reason was sponsoring teams, they had the Stiefel Freethought Foundation matching donations, and the Foundation Beyond Belief logo was on the back of every shirt. Every Light the Night shirt had that. It was awesome. Since then, it's just been local teams that are continuing to do it, but we had the, I think it's development director for the local LLS branch. She joined the streamathon for a little bit in that first hour, and that was really cool.
Yeah, really cool. It was really good. She was like the legit person, right? She was the business. Mm-hmm. And then the party followed for 11 more hours.
Yep.
So yeah, it was really fun. A lot of people, we won a couple of books even. So yeah, was cool.
Yeah, we were giving away 4 copies of The Story of God by Chris Matheson, autographed copies that he should be sending out here pretty soon for the 4 people who won.
All right.
And Lauren's also has been giving out coloring books for people who donate under her.
Yeah, I mean, fair warning, it's Carnivorous Plants of Idaho and the Pacific Northwest coloring books. Really
awesome.
Specific and like a niche coloring book. You're not going to find one of these at Barnes & Noble, that's for damn sure. So I hope you enjoy it.
If you're a botany geek and like adult coloring, then this is right up your alley. If you donate, that's still available if you donate at least $5.
Yep, $5 to cover the printing costs. But if you donate to me on my page, which is in the show notes, mm-hmm. you can get, I'll be able to send you a coloring book.
Yeah, and the show notes, in case you don't know where those are, atheistnomads.com/166. Every episode show notes are available at atheistnomads.com/the episode number. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to dusting off the degree. When I was in the seminary, for one of my classes, we had quite the discussion. I think it was an entire class period. It might have been even longer, on Christianity's gender problem. Specifically, 2/3 of all people who show up to church on any given weekend across all Christian churches across the entire United States, 2/3 are women. Men are far less likely to be members and are far less likely to attend than women. And the focus of the discussion was on the Christian message, changes that had happened to the Christian message over the last 100, 150 years, with it getting more personal and lovey-dovey and touchy-feely and being all about your personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Blah.
And
sorry, that was me throwing up a little in my mouth.
And the focus continued on why this won't appeal to men, because men are, you know, they aren't going to appeal. The emotional stuff isn't going to appeal to them as much. And the relationship element, especially with a man, isn't going to appeal with them as much. And when you look at it from the standpoint of the way men are socialized to be within, especially conservative Christianity, of course they aren't going to be comfortable with having a close, intimate relationship with a man.
Even if it is God, that's just weird.
It's weird, yeah. And they're expected to... That you also have the element where they encourage, you know, like, so directly socialize men to be the dominant, aggressive leaders of the family, and then expect them to submit to Christ. And if you're socializing someone to be an unyielding leader and then expect the same kind of submission that you're socializing the other half of the population to have, that's going to be hard to internalize for a lot of people. What the conversation, though, didn't ever go to was, why does Christianity appeal to women? That was just kind of a given. And yeah, there was a little bit with the touchy-feely message, that whole part that, oh yeah, this appeals to women. I think it's more than that. I think it's a lot more than that. Christians, especially conservative Christians, are encouraged to marry early, to marry young. It is huge taboo if someone gets pregnant outside of marriage. They are encouraged to wait until marriage, and most don't.
Yeah, they know better.
But those who do want to get it on as soon as they can, which means getting married, and those who don't are going to feel really guilty about it and are more likely to then get married. And especially with the traditional gender roles that are pushed in Christianity, it's, I think, one of the biggest factors is the fact that, okay, women are expected, Christian women are expected to have children very young, when they're not really emotionally ready for it. And the church becomes the social structure. You get free daycare effectively during the church service. You get time away from your kids where you get to actually interact with other adults, which you might not get to have the rest of the time. You get the opportunity to socialize with other people in the same situation as you.
I think you just hit it right, nail on the head, so to speak, right there. I know being raised Unitarian, that was exactly what mom was doing with us. She had four kids that were, at any given age, somebody was usually trying to get into the bathroom with her. I mean, it was, you cannot escape children. But at church, at the Unitarian Universalist, she was able to kind of pass them off onto somebody else for a while. And we weren't released until the adults were already at coffee and having and talking. So she had a few moments of being social and being herself. And I expect a lot of women get that relief.
Mm-hmm. And even for families where they have more traditional or more egalitarian gender roles. Okay, mom takes the kids to church, gets a break from the kids, and dad gets a break from the whole family. Actually, everyone gets a break from everyone else in that structured environment, whether or not both parents go. So it's, yeah, I think that's exactly what's there, what's going on. But I do also think it goes a little bit beyond that because of the fact that the vast majority of atheists are men.
Which still just, like, a part of me wants to argue that. Say, no. But statistically?
The statistics are about 2-1.
2-1.
If not more.
I think off the top of my head so many women that I know who don't believe in, as many. But that's because I'm, you know, I've fallen into the only your friends are in your Facebook feed kind of preaching to the choir sort of mentality where I'm just seeing the hits and not the misses.
Mm-hmm.
Misses.
Well, and okay, you look at the local atheist community. Not the vast majority of people who show up are men and
single men.
And the women who show up aren't single for long.
They're fresh meat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, that happened to me. And I wasn't even one of the attractive ones. I was kind of...
Yeah, you are.
Aw. But I think if... I don't know. If you want to attract more women to atheism, and that is a really twisted way of putting it, because you either believe or you don't. You can't really convince somebody. You can put doubts in their mind, but you can't deconvert somebody very well. So you're not really attracting people to atheism, but if you're trying to get more atheists out into a community-like setting, having that Sunday break really is probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, the Sunday Assembly movement is definitely...
That's what it's called. I couldn't remember.
I think they're doing a wonderful job with this. The Oasis is also doing a wonderful job with trying to set this all up.
And then, of course, there's always the UU.
There are the UU, and there are also now. See, there's and the parenting groups that can do some of the same things, but when you think about it, the time to get where these changes are going to happen is while young, usually while single, and usually without children. These demographic changes, they need to happen in high school and college.
Go college! Woo! Says the person who flunked out of college. But, yeah, the point is, yeah, you need to hit people when they're at their most open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to get pretty close-minded by the time you're in your 30s.
I left Christianity single and in grad school. Yeah, I was a seminary student, but still, I was a student. And I was so grateful at that point that I was had a really hard time trying to find somebody who wanted to be a pastor's wife.
He looks at me.
I just wanted to see what look you'd have on your face at that moment.
I am not a pastor's wife. I'm
no.
I'm not even an ex-pastor's wife. Nope. You were lucky. You got out early enough.
Yep. I never actually got that title, even though I did have some mail that continued to be addressed to Pastor Dustin Williams for about 2 years after I left the seminary.
Nah.
But I was never actually a pastor. But that's getting off the a little bit tangential to the topic. There's only so much you can do to... Like, as far as atheists and the atheist movement and atheist communities, that is always going to be a small segment of people who are atheists that want to be active in a movement. And I think you can do a little better with the community, like local communities, than you can with the broader movement, because of the fact that being part of a national movement, there are other priorities. And it's a lot easier for white men to think that religion is the problem than it is for women or minorities who look at it and know atheist men, while not quite as likely to be racist or sexist, there's still plenty who are. So obviously it isn't religion's the problem, and that racism and sexism is the problem.
Yeah, you have to get to the root of it, not just blame this big evil bad guy and claim to want to, you know, be this knight in shining armor and go defeat it. Well, all the big bad stuff is still there.
Mm-hmm. And people only have so much time to actually focus on causes.
Oh, God.
And so much energy. Yeah.
Right? Get this. That's why it's so important, at least for me, to live in a university town. Because I want to be around that constant influx of new ideas and new protests and people who care, because they have the energy to do it. And I just don't have the energy. I didn't when I was 20, so much less now. But I still love the energy.
Yeah. And actually, I think we've pretty well hashed it out. Yeah. All right. So there isn't any history, which is good since we're already over on this segment. And so rather than doing the breaks like we've been doing, I'm going to go ahead and just play the bumper and speak from the heart. So we get support from two places. Archway Hosting, which provides us with their website.
Woo!
And has been for 2.5, almost 3 years.
Wow, time that, flies.
Yeah. It was January 2014 was when we switched over from a host that will not be named that preceded them. And even if we were paying full price for the plan that we were on, the cost of the service would be a tiny, tiny fraction of what I was paying before. And the quality of the service has been so much higher. We've only had downtime that I've been aware of 2 or 3 times, and each time it was to protect Archway Hosting. It was a website that Lauren had up that was getting spammed in the comments.
Yeah, which I didn't notice.
There was, I think Atheist Nomads at one point was getting, there was an attempt for a brute force attack, and we lost access or our account was halted briefly for those. That wasn't Archway's fault. They were responding to problems. We were victims, and they were very helpful in getting everything resolved and helping us improve it to make sure it didn't happen again. What that is right there is amazing customer service. They respond quickly. With the one time with the brute force attacks, I discovered it when I was trying to post the episode at like 9 o'clock at night and had it resolved by 11. That was pretty freaking awesome.
That's pretty cool.
So if you're looking for a website, I highly recommend checking out Archway Hosting. They're well worth it. Great deal and great service. And then of course, the other source of support for the show is our loyal and awesome patrons.
Patrons!
You guys rock. We couldn't do it without
Patrones,
you.
Patrones, even. No, patrons make it possible. Dustin puts in a lot of work into this show. Like, most people would consider it a second job kind of work into the show. And, well, he basically wants to do it as a volunteer, but that's just not the way things work. So patrons make it possible. They keep the bills getting paid. They allow Dustin to have his playtime. And we appreciate each and every one of you.
Well, and realistically, one of the things that I don't know that everyone thinks about when it comes to patronage is with any kind of volunteer project, hobby, labor of love, whatever you want to call it, like a podcast, there are times when you get kind of burned out. I would say that happens roughly every 50 episodes, 50 to 75 episodes. Burnout comes around. And there are life changes that happen that make it a bit harder to prioritize doing a hobby. When there's money there, that provides a compelling incentive to power through.
Yeah, you have a product that you're delivering to people versus just something that you're just randomly doing for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that product means, and the product's quality means a lot to Dustin.
Yeah.
And to me too, but you know, whatever. I'm just here to have fun.
It's made it possible to power through the life changes and burnout. So yeah, patrons, you guys rock. Literally, this show would not still be going if it wasn't for you.
Yay.
All right, let's go ahead and actually I'm going to play the bumper again and then we'll go to news.
And do we have some doozies? Newsy doozy.
So the first one is an update on the story that Gary and I talked about last week when I was interviewing him with the Visual Arts Collective and burlesque performers getting into some trouble over violating Idaho's liquor license obscenity rules.
So as long as you're showing any kind of titty and serving booze, there was a law broken.
And the specific rule is any part of the female breast below the top of the areola.
Yeah, that includes under boob or pasties.
Uh-huh.
So for burlesque shows who are doing this for, oh my God, I mean, this there are groups here in Boise who do it for charity, who do it for fun. It's very sex positive. It's awesome. And then they're kind of getting punished by not being able to have beer at their shows.
Oh, heck, there was one. I've only been to one of their shows, but the one act that was the most impressive is this woman in pasties climbing up ribbons and doing an amazing performance. The fact that she was almost naked was secondary to the performance she was putting on. But the fact that she wanted to do it that way, and with the way that performers were dressed at that show, everyone was dressed how they were comfortable being. There were some who were fully clothed. There were some in bikinis. There were some in pasties. Nobody could be lower than that. But they were all going with what they were comfortable with in the performance they were doing, and that was awesome.
And the shows are awesome.
Yeah.
If you have a local burlesque place and you're comfortable with it, I would highly suggest going to check it out.
Oh, so anyway, what's the update here?
The update is that the ACLU and the state of Idaho have reached a settlement over it. So basically, the state of Idaho has agreed to not enforce the law. So
nice.
Burlesque away!
Awesome.
We're going to have to do that, actually. I feel bad for not having done that with you yet.
Yeah.
We need to go to a burlesque show.
Frankly, Frankie was the one who started the suit. They do shows all the free shows all the time.
Yeah, I know. And our friends go all the time.
We just have to get there early to get a seat, which means you're driving. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to Mexico, where a Catholic tribunal acquitted a priest who had admitted to raping about 30 young girls between the ages of 5 and 10.
5 and 10.
All indigenous young girls from Oaxaca, a state in southern Mexico that is known for a large indigenous population, and he has HIV.
Oh, just icing on the cake.
So an HIV-positive priest was raping 5 to 10-year-old little girls, native little girls, and the Archdiocese of Mexico has absolved him of any wrongdoing.
Typical. So yeah, those priest costumes that are coming out for the in the Halloween stores are rather relevant, I'd say.
I did that a few years back. Yeah. But what's also interesting here is the civil authorities know all about this. Some of the victims have actually come forward. There has been an admission of guilt, and the civil authorities have not brought about any charges.
And it's still not enough to get them to do anything.
Because, well, it's the Catholic Church. They have a lot of influence there in Mexico, especially in indigenous areas. And so they aren't going to do anything.
No, you don't bite the hand that feeds you.
No, yeah, they're just going to leave that to the church. No, that's bullshit.
No, the church should be coming down and saying no. But they're not going to, because that is their way.
Well, honestly, the ideal case here would be the church should be at least letting the civil authorities know about crimes like this. In this case, the civil authorities know. Everybody knows. But these are criminal acts. Many, many very severe criminal acts, and it is the state's job to take care of those, not the church's. I don't care what country you're in. The state's job is to protect their citizens, especially their most vulnerable citizens, like children and indigenous populations, and especially the children of the indigenous populations. You have to protect them from people like Father Jose Garcia Ataulfo? Sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what you get.
Yeah. So in South Africa, there was a pastor who...
Oh, man, we're going all over the world here, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah. Pastor Letsego of the Christ Embassy in Limpopo, South Africa.
That's a really cool name.
Was trying to send a message to his mistress via WhatsApp with pictures of his genitals. In other words, dick pics.
Dick pic!
With the message that said, "Wife is away. It's all yours tonight."
Yeah.
Well, instead of sending this to his mistress, he sent it to a group of his church members. As soon as he sent it, he supposedly realized his mistake, left the group conversation, and hung himself.
So, two thoughts go through this. One, he was planning on committing suicide and did that as a fuck you to the group. Which, I don't know what the situation is, but that's like the first thing that came to my mind. The second one is, he was looking for an excuse. And he did an accidental self-destruct button that once it was pressed, it was like, okay, well, oops.
I am actually more likely to go with taking it all at face value.
Oh.
That the...
He was overcome with guilt and
not that he's overcome with guilt. It was embarrassment, yeah. It was... He just admitted to his church members that he had been cheating on his wife. They were not going to take kindly to that. It was going to destroy his career, his family, his everything about his life. So he just took his life. He took the coward's way out after an honest mistake.
Yeah, I guess in America, we're just so used to this happening that to us, it's no big deal. Heck, in America, a guy sends a dick pic to his mistress and then demands an apology from the wife for not being there for him.
Or churches will ask the teenager who had sex with the pastor to apologize to the wife.
Oh, yeah. That was a classic.
Yeah, yeah. So this is...
stirs up a lot of negative feelings. A lot of negativity that you just want to, like, I don't know, spear at somebody's soul. Let's say Trump's soul. What if we were to do a spiritual attack on Trump with all of this anger and rage that we've developed?
Okay, so like maybe a satanic attack?
Yeah, a satanic attack.
Okay, so Donald Trump was in Cleveland at the Midwest Vision and Values Pastors Leadership Conference, where a pro-Trump pastor and co-host of the event took the mic with Donald Trump at the podium and a number of other pastors around. And let's go ahead and listen to what happened.
Lay hands on him, and she's going to pray. And I want you to stretch forth your hands. I really want you to intercede on his behalf. Years ago, when we first met him and he was considering running for president, there was a great preacher there. I don't want to say his name, but he is nationally known. And he said something to you. I don't know if you remember. He said, I want you to understand, Mr. Trump, that if you choose to run for president, there's going to be a concentrated satanic attack against you. He said this over 5 years ago. He said there's going to be a demon, principalities and powers are going to war against you on a level that you've never seen before. And I'm watching this every day. So we're going to pray for him.
Let's stretch our hands right now. Father, we thank you in the name of Jesus that you raise up a man for such a time as this. God, we ask you right now that your choice is this choice. We believe, Lord God, that you ordain things. You said all authority is of you. Now, God, I ask that you would touch this man, Donald J. Trump. Give him the anointing to lead this nation. We thank you, God, that as a room full of clergy, a room full of leaders, a room full of business owners, mothers, wives, husbands, fathers, we ask for help, and we ask you, God, to let that help be in the form of the next president, Mr. Donald J. Trump. We ask you, God, to bless him, keep him safe, give him the wisdom and the strength to lead this great nation. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank y'all so much for letting me go a little bit longer. God bless y'all.
Now, an interesting thing that I noticed there is when she's listing off all the people that were there, business owners were at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And then it got down to, you know, men, women, children. It was like in an actual hierarchy with business owners being at the top. What does that tell you?
Wow, that really lets you know where their values are.
Values. But yes, satanic attacks.
So, yeah, it's definitely not women and children first. It's women and children last.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And they definitely don't recall Jesus' words about how it'll be easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's the business owners first.
I bet somebody very rich has made a gigantic needle and made camels walk through it.
Oh, I heard the apologetic excuse for that growing up. That no, the eye of the needle wasn't referring to the like a sewing needle like we have now. No, this was referring to the gate to enter a walled city, but the gates were short. This particular gate that they called the eye of the needle, and so a camel would have to go in on its knees.
Wow, they really dug deep for that one, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Really digging. Like trying to get a camel to walk through something on its knees. That's not going to happen.
So, yeah, no. Trump got hands laid on him. And I do honestly think that there has been concentrated satanic attacks on him. Because that's just people being frustrated and angry.
Well,
which is really easy to do, considering it's frickin' Trump.
Well, and when you look at where Trump's values are and where our friends the Satanists place their values, like on the autonomy of women over their bodies and a firm wall of separation between church and state.
Amen.
Yeah, Satanists aren't going to like Trump.
No.
Most He's a crazy Satanists. Asshole.
There's... I'm sure there's the rare statistical anomaly. We also have atheists and humanists who are very conservative. and they have every right to be that way. I just think they're wrong.
Now, of course, with this...
Sorry.
With the these satanic attacks they were talking about, they weren't referring to attacks from Satanists. They were talking about the devil himself attacking Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing the opposite. If I were a believer in such things, I would say, oh, hey, he's got something unholy with, you know, giving him some extra boost here, because there's no way.
Yeah, yeah.
The American people have been bamboozled by the devil. And that was just an excuse for me to say bamboozled. Oh, it was awesome.
Good
it was
job.
As satisfying
good
as I
job.
Thought it would be. It was a good Scrabble word. All right. Speaking of Trump.
Yes. We were at Hyde Park just a couple weeks ago. And at the Hyde Park Street Fair. And working the booth for the Humanists of Idaho. And almost everybody who showed up was happy to see us there. They were looking for us. They were curious. They wanted stickers.
And buttons.
And buttons. But there were two people who showed up with the same, almost exact same question.
Yeah, two separate groups of people, because it was a husband and wife team. Each one, they were probably about, what? 15 minutes apart from each other?
30
half hour.
A half hour apart, yeah. What do you think of Sharia law?
Yeah, that took me a moment. I even asked the guy to clarify. I said, are you talking about biblical Sharia law, or are you talking about the Quran Sharia law? Because I knew what he meant, but I wanted him to think about it.
Okay, now, we had Richard Carrier when he spoke for National Day of Reason here in Boise. He did the whole biblical, trying to do theocracy of any kind of Sharia. It kind of, sort of, no. Sharia specifically refers to Islamic law. That is a proper noun, not a generalized not an adjective. It's a proper noun. So I knew exactly what he was talking about. In the first guy's case, I knew exactly where he's coming from and was not sure how to respond. In the other guy's case, I was shocked because he was holding his beer just right so that all I saw on his shirt was Hillary for per. What was under his beer was the rest of the word prison.
I knew right away. My point of view was I could see the prison part, but also because his wife had a Trump sweater on. So I'm like, okay, so obvious Trump supporters.
Yeah.
What do you think about Sharia law? I was like, okay, if you separate church and state completely, Sharia law is non-issue. It's a non-issue.
Yeah. We actually got both of them to agree.
Both of them agreed. You're right. You're absolutely right. Religion doesn't belong in the government. But okay, so what are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And that started a whole mess.
Oh man! Like
they
some
are afraid of everything.
The two angles that they really harped on.
It's weird. Two totally separate people, but they hit the same, almost the exact same points.
Yeah.
Like they had both been listening to the same radio show.
Yeah, or just been to the same booth that was feeding them the same talking points. But so one of the angles was Common Core teaches the five pillars of Islam.
This is true.
Yes.
We cannot deny that. It is true. Common Core does have, it does teach the five pillars in the world's religions, the world religion section.
Uh-huh. It also,
where they teach about all the religions.
Yeah. Like the, what is it? Narrow path or noble path or whatever it is in Buddhism, and the basics of Christianity.
I mean, it's like, this is called getting to know your world.
I've helped teach.
Dustin's taught a section of it.
I've helped teach this at a local middle school. I got to tell them, yes, I have helped teach world religions. And yes, we did cover the five pillars of Islam and also Christianity. And I covered Sikhism, which their textbooks didn't.
Right.
But Buddhism and Hinduism.
Exactly.
You can't understand history of the Middle East if you don't understand Islam.
These people were more interested in having nothing to do. They they wanted no Islam in the schools whatsoever. They didn't want it mentioned. They don't want it taught, which to me is incredibly irresponsible. You can't have these kids grow up not knowing about what they find out online is what they know, or what their parents parrot is what they know.
Yeah.
No, they need to know about this stuff. This is important. And then they can come to their own opinions, which is what the parents are afraid of. What if my kid decides that he's Islam? Well,
that's not how it works.
According to the Constitution, they have every right to be whatever they want.
Yeah, but it's also just not how it works. There is no evidence that's going to happen. The growth in Islam is because they have more babies.
Yeah, well,
that's it.
That's something to be said for it.
Christians are not having as many babies as Muslims are, and atheists are not having as many babies as Christians. So when you look at the projections for major world religions, Islam is expected to completely, dominate over Christianity numbers-wise. And atheism is expected to decline, all because of birth rates.
Yep, because those damn atheists choose to have no kids or only one kid. They need to be breeders.
But the other part on the five pillars in Common Core that was hilarious was when he claimed that Common Core was developed in Qatar.
Or some people know it, Qatar.
Yeah, little Middle Eastern country of Qatar.
That point, we were like, what? We're like, no, where are you getting this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Common Core, if you want to say it correctly, might have ties to the Middle East. Because guess what? Guess where algebra was developed? Uh-huh. The Middle East. They were the epitome. They were the center of learning for ages. So, of course, stuff being taught in Common Core came from the Middle East.
Algebra did Arabic numerals? Anybody?
Oh, my God. It's just
despite the fact that numeral system was actually copied from Hindu Indians and by a Persian, we call them Arabic numerals.
Well, yeah.
But it's just, yeah. But
so at this point, we question his sources. And that's where he...
Breitbart.
Yeah.
Yep. You need to be looking at real good information sources like InfoWars and Breitbart. And it was like, oh, fuck.
I could hear Dustin's brain snap. The weight of it all just caused it to collapse.
It was the first time at a public event where I have raised my voice.
Oh my God. They got into a yelling match and I was so proud. I was like, yes, this is what being at the humanist booth is all about. So let's get in fights, people. Yeah. We got in two. It was awesome. What was weird is that we got in two over the exact same thing and we were like one tent away from Planned Parenthood. We didn't have a single person come up and say, "Why? How do you feel about abortions?" No, it was the Sharia law thing.
But if you're afraid of Muslims, and you look around and you know that humanists are mostly atheists, and the odds are the people that are going to be at the booth are going to be atheists, then if you want to find somebody who doesn't like Muslims or Islam, let me start that over. If you want to find somebody who doesn't like Islam, and you don't understand the difference between Islam and Muslims, then you would expect to find allies among atheists.
Which they initially did when we said separation of church and state. They were all for it. They're like, yeah, as long as you keep the Bible out of the schools and prayer
now,
and all that stuff.
Both of their cases,
too.
Before they agreed to that, they had to think for a little bit because they were shocked. They was like, but. Because they were probably thinking, Christianity is the way to help keep Islam out of government. No. Keep all religion out of government if you want to keep any out.
Right.
That's the only way to keep any out is to keep them all out. And so where they eventually got to was in both cases, the one we ended later on Breitbart, but...
that was just a kill.
In both cases, we spent quite a bit of time on refugees because they are terrified of refugees because they're Muslims, at least the ones we're getting from Syria and a lot of the ones we're getting from Africa. And Boise is a refugee city.
Right.
They claimed that we're getting more Syrian refugees than anywhere else in America. And if this is going to be fair, it needs to be spread out evenly. No, there are only a handful of designated refugee cities. These are cities who have signed up, who have volunteered, who have gotten themselves certified as national refugee cities.
It's actually something to be proud of, not where, something to be disdained.
Where people can come who are looking for asylum.
Right, because their freaking hometown just got bombed.
And they're afraid that somebody is going to kill them if they can't get out. Just because your hometown gets bombed, that doesn't give you a right to asylum. But to become a refugee in the United States, you need to be granted asylum. And these are people that are fleeing from definite risk to their life, their liberty, their freedoms, and made a compelling argument to convince the government that, yes, they need asylum. And Boise is a city that has volunteered to be a sanctuary for these people. Yes, some are Muslim. They're Muslims who are trying to escape Islamic extremism. These are Muslims who are actually afraid of the same, at the core, for what's the real thing these people are afraid of that we were talking to, it's Islamic extremists. And these refugees are afraid of the same thing.
And they don't see the commonality there. They just see other and they hate it.
Yep.
And that got me really angry.
Oh, fuck.
And then they had to bring up that stupid Syrian refugees raped a girl in Twin Falls. Well, no, that's not true. They're like, we know that wasn't true, but it still happened. What?
They weren't Syrian.
They weren't Syrian, yeah, but they were still refugees. And okay, so you're going to start...
And like, I looked at the story, and the initial version I saw, I think, was actually on Breitbart. And I was like, oh, this is tainted. So I dug a little deeper, and what I found was, no, this was the same kind of inappropriate stuff that kids do that you find across any culture.
Right, she wasn't gang raped.
It was kids being inappropriate.
Which happens. Is too bad that they learned that, but that's what happens when you're moving from place to place and considered deplorable and treated like shit.
It sucks that it happened. It was a terrible thing to happen. But when it comes down to it, when I looked at it, the story wasn't about refugees. It wasn't about Muslims. It was a story about kids who had not been appropriately learned about where their boundaries should be.
Yeah.
Because if you don't teach kids about where those boundaries are, they're not going to figure it out on their own. Most of them won't. You have to let them know. You have to teach them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes more sense that refugees are going to have a harder time finding the time to teach those lessons.
Yeah.
They're just trying to survive. And,
we had no patience for these guys.
These assholes.
A yelling match ensued. Oh. It was magical. All right.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to the bumper and then science and technology.
I love that bumper.
It's back.
All right, science. Okay, this first one, don't write me angry emails. You know what? Do write me angry emails because we want more feedback about the show. NASA squeezed in a new constellation into the traditional astrological zodiac. Right. They're messing with your zodiac signs. The note that I made here was new zodiac adds challenge for Ted Cruz killings. Because... Zodiac killer. Anyway, I thought it was funny. I laughed at my own joke.
Very nice. Very nice.
So this isn't science, but why? So why is NASA, right? Science gurus are messing with everyone's favorite section of the newspaper. Well, the Babylonians invented our current concept of the zodiac 3,000 years ago, and it was base. And the idea is sound. Wait, well, no, it's not. But magical woo world, it's sound. You have the sun, you have Earth, and you have a line connecting the two. If you extend that line out, depending on what time of year you're looking at, a different constellation is being pointed out. So that's how we get the 12 signs. Is in late April, Taurus happens to be up and in line with the sun and the Earth. Okay, so you're a Taurus. That's how that works. However, there was a 13th zodiac that never got its place. Not only that, but 3,000 years ago, our view of the sky has shifted. So they've updated the tongue-in-cheek updated the zodiac, put in the missing 13th zodiac sign, and released all this in the news last week. And it has been hilarious that people did not realize that this was basically a couple of bored scientists and historians who just thought this would be fun thing to do. So what does this mean to the average human being? Nothing. It's still fake. All right.
That is awesome, though.
Yeah. So I learned about the zodiac and why it still means nothing.
But I do appreciate that NASA and the CDC and Department of Defense and other government agencies do have some fun from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Yeah.
And NASA's played around with pop culture stuff before. That's all this really is. Yeah, it's woo. It's bullshit. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. But it's fun pop culture.
And somebody's like, you know what? This hasn't been updated in 3,000 years. I wonder what it would look like now. Apparently, now I'm a goat instead of a bull. So, there you go.
Does that mean I am too?
So are you.
Oh.
We're Aries, I think.
No.
Sorry. Wah, wah.
Now, I was still born in the year of the rat.
I was born in the year of the ox. So being in the month of the ox, also in the year of the ox, made me super bull-like.
Yeah, but now the goat ox
doesn't work as well.
No.
Okay,
no.
So moving on to real science. NASA has recently been teasing us about some new discovery in Europa. And everybody's like, oh, aliens! No aliens. See Europa Report if that's what you really want to see. Terrible sci-fi movie. We covered it in Sci-Fi Nomads. It was excellent. Okay, so, but back in 2013, a South Pole geyser...
That was great. Yes, I was You're the Rat. Sorry.
Science! Back in 2013, a South Pole geyser was seen on Europa, which is, you know, Jupiter's moon.
Mm-hmm.
A new set of geysers has since been discovered, showing NASA scientists a complex geographical interaction on the moon's icy surface. So if you know anything, or at least watched Europa Report, you know that Europa is basically a moon that's comprised of an icy, icy shelf with an ocean underneath it. We don't know what's in the ocean, obviously. But we didn't know how tectonically or... anything like that, how that works. We don't know if these ice shelves are crashing into each other or what. Well, now we know that they at least have geysers that are erupting all over the moon. It's not just one geyser, the South Pole geyser, erupting always. They're kind of spread out and all over the place.
That's really cool.
The way they found it is even cooler. So what they do is they wait for Europa to pass in front of Jupiter, and then they use the shadow... to look the shadow of the water to look for geysers or any activity. So Jupiter is super bright. You have this dark moon moving in front of it. And so anything that's spraying off of Europa's surface will be seen as a shadow. Stuff
interesting.
Like water, for example, very dense and creates a shadow. And that's how we found Europa's geysers.
Very cool.
It is really cool. It's not quite what people were hoping for. No, it's never going to be aliens. Get over it. We were kind of hoping for a little bit more discoveries regarding the ocean. But knowing that the ice shelf is geographically active is still really fascinating. So that's well, I guess it can't be geographically active. It would be isographically active.
Well, the European Space Agency is sending a probe. It's supposed to be launching shortly after 2020, getting to Jupiter around 2030. And it's going to be looking at the moons, the biggest ones, including Europa. The ones with
the big four,
the big ones with liquid water.
Oh,
and
maybe not.
The goal is to be figuring out how much water is there actually there, how thick is the ice, what's the temperatures, what's in the atmosphere, find out all these details so that we can have a much better idea of which one do we really need to look at closely to see if there's life there.
Not only is there life, but can it sustain life?
Yeah.
I know we're working on this whole Mars issue, and some people have argued for Venus. That's so short-sighted. If we're going to look at the solar system, Jupiter is where it's going to be at. That's where civilization will have a second branch, I think.
Space stations in orbit around Jupiter and colonies on the moons.
Ah, it's awesome.
That's a much better chance.
And especially if you plan on traveling outside the solar system. You got nothing else. It's amazing.
Jupiter Station, Star Trek. Come on, people.
Exactly. Cowboy Bebop, Jupiter Gate. Everybody knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the last science, this one I left a little open-ended because I kind of wanted to get Dustin's take on it.
Okay.
Oxytocin in men enhances spirituality during meditation.
Okay.
So it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Oxytocin is that love hormone, the connected hormone that makes you feel closer to somebody. Famous for being aroused during lovemaking, as well as when breastfeeding. So that whole connection that a mother and a baby feel is basically just oxytocin flooding the system. Well, apparently, if you're given a shot of oxytocin and you meditate, you feel so much more connected to the universe around you.
The deepest spiritual experiences I had were all very emotional feeling. And when I, just like a week after I quit the evangelistic series, dropped out of the seminary, left Christianity, all that stuff, while I was still in Mexico, I had a couple beers on the snorkeling boat, then went through some shops and had several complimentary shots of tequila.
As per tradition.
Bought some cigars, decided I needed to sit down because the plaza I was in was starting to spin. And I cut the cigar, lit it up, took about four puffs, and the feeling I had felt just like those deeply spiritual experiences. It is purely brain chemistry that creates that.
The brain is magic.
And it totally makes sense that oxytocin would increase that, because it creates connections and senses of feeling connected and heightens emotions and love and bonding and all of that. And yeah, that's what you're going to get in meditation or a deeply spiritual experience. So if you have a shot of it, oh, it's totally going to boost that.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. And it's just another nail in the coffin, so to speak, for spirituality. It's all brain hormones. Psych.
Very nice.
All right. So that's it for science.
All right. So we got some feedback from Data Logan. This was regarding the don't vote third party spiel I did 2 weeks ago. And it was rather lengthy, so I'm not going to go through all of it. But yes, Data, I did read all of it. So basically, the gist of what he was saying is, he took some issue with my description of first past the post as being the problem, and doing runoff elections is fixing the problem, because that still leaves open the possibility for spoilers. Because if, and this is definitely an issue I've seen with it myself, is that if you have 10 Democrats running against 3 Republicans in the primary, then obviously a Republican is going to be in the top two, even if it's in a heavily Democratic area. And you could conceivably have a big enough spread. But if you look at the presidential election, if that had been an open primary and the top two from the presidential primaries this year went on to the national election, it'd be Hillary against Bernie.
Heck yeah.
Nationwide, everybody would have had a choice between two Democrats. And so, yeah, it doesn't fix all of the problems. The ranked voting does a better job of fixing that. But one thing he pointed out was in a benefit for voting third party in a presidential election is in states like Washington, Republicans and Democrats as part of major parties automatically get on the primary ballot. Third party candidates, minor parties, have to get signatures to get onto the ballot. And the only way to be classified as a major party is for your candidate to get more than 5% of the vote in the state for the presidency. Now, I think that's not a problem. His big objection was minor parties are having to put more of their time and money into gathering signatures rather than campaigning like the big parties are doing. I say, no, that's actually not the problem. For one, you don't want a minor party that has no support. So just someone saying, I have a new party, I want to be on the ballot, getting on the ballot. That would be insane. Right now in Idaho, we have somebody who legally changed his name to pro-life, who runs for governor every time. And he's always on the Republican ticket. I would hate for him to be able to just decide, oh, I've got the pro-life party now. I am pro-life running for the pro-life party and get automatically on there. No, you need to actually be able to prove that you have support. With the major parties, we know they have support. I think the threshold maybe should be lowered. 5% seems reasonable, but I think the problem isn't in having that threshold. I think the problem is having that for presidential. No, if you're talking about for state ballots, for state primaries, it should be 5% across everything. Or maybe at the point that you actually get somebody into the state legislature, then you qualify automatically. There's better ways to do that. I don't think voting third party just to try to get another party easier access to the ballot is the approach. Figuring out a more fair way to get minor parties access to the ballot would be a better approach. And as far as these small parties wasting their campaign time and money, that's not what they're doing by getting signatures. People don't know about them and they don't have money because they're small parties. That's why you don't have very many people running for these small parties in local elections. So getting out there and meeting people, shaking hands, talking to people, and getting people convinced to sign the petition to get them onto the ballot. That is very worthwhile campaigning. And that's the kind of grassroots campaigning that I think is reasonable to expect out of minor parties to prove that they are capable of and have the support to merit serious attention. Because if they can't get that kind of support, they don't deserve our attention. And that's one reason why I don't think third parties deserve attention on the presidential ballot. Not only are they spoilers, but if they aren't filling the rest of the ticket, I don't think they deserve our attention at the highest levels.
No, you need to start local and work your way up. So I mean, run for office locally and run as a third, fourth, fifth party, whatever. And get the Green Party or the Libertarians, if you so choose, get them into those offices. Maybe set some time, find a way to run yourself. You know, just run. You won't win. You may not win, but you at least are offering people a choice.
There's a socialist city council member in Seattle. One other thing Data brought up was making a change to where things like city council, everybody is voting for all of the seats instead of local seats. In places like Boise, we end up voting for multiple seats for city council each time. There are districts, but there are also open seats, but none of them are ever ranked to try to increase representation. We need a complete overhaul of our electoral system. But where that overhaul, the only place that overhaul can happen is at the state level, because it's states that control elections. The federal government doesn't. Congress doesn't. The president absolutely does not. That's all at the state. And states figure out who they send to Congress. They figure out how they're going to fill their legislature, how they're going to elect their governor, and they figure out who they're going to send to the Electoral College to vote for the president. Voting in the United States is almost 100% a state issue. And so if you want change, that has to happen at the state level. We can't expect it to happen nationally, and we can't have it nationally without a constitutional amendment, which requires support of 3/4 of the states. So still, it's a state issue.
Yeah, he's been he's been obsessing about this ever since he got the email, I'm sure. But thank you so much for writing.
Yeah. All right, and we have a new platinum sponsor via PayPal. And this
platinum
is Michael.
Is
$10 a month.
$10, $8 to $19 per month makes you a platinum patron. Michael.
Yeah.
Aw, so, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Yay, thank you.
But overall, we have been trending down on patronage throughout the year. We're actually, at least on Patreon, and I think actually across both Patreon and PayPal, taken all as a whole, we're at about the lowest we've been at since around episode 90.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was before me. So, you know, show your support. We have several levels. We've got starting with bronze, which is nothing to be ashamed of. This is less than $4 a month. And, you know, if you happen to have that extra buck to kick our way, that would be amazing.
The only thing we ask for is a dollar an episode. If you think this is adds a dollar's worth of value to you, and there's not a whole lot you can get for a dollar, then, yeah, give us $1 a month. It's real easy on Patreon. If we don't put out an episode, you don't get charged. And if you can't do that, maybe a dollar a month.
Yeah.
A dollar an episode with a $1 limit on Patreon, and that is all you'll get charged. If you think what we do is worth it, then yeah, we would love to have your support.
And if you think it's worth a little bit more than that, $4 to $7 a month gets you gold sponsorship. That's the lifeblood right there. That's what keeps the show going, is those little $5, $6.
A dollar an episode.
A dollar an episode, exactly. So, gold sponsors, thank you so much. Platinum sponsors, even better. They're $8 to $19 a month. This is for the people who look forward to the show. People who went out of their way to download this show and listen to it and really enjoy it and look forward to the next episode. Support us a little bit, $8 to $19 a month. The nuclear sponsors are $20 to $35 a month. These guys are they're just awesome. there's nothing else to say about it. Sometimes they represent groups. Sometimes it's just an individual, but always super, super awesome. Dark Matter.
Then there's Travis.
And then there's Travis.
Hi, Travis.
God bless Travis.
No, God bless Travis.
God bless. Dark Matter sponsors are greater than $35 a month. Now, these are months, not episodes. We release 3 to 4 episodes.
4 to 5.
4 to 5 episodes a month. So, you know, that's really generous.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what allows Dustin to make upgrades for the show. It allows him to pay the bills. That's what makes it worth it.
Yep.
Now, we don't expect everybody to be able to do that, which is why the dollar an episode thing is kind of our mantra. But you can change it, too. If you happen to have a couple extra bucks this month, that would be great.
There's PayPal. Okay, I think we've
beat it to death.
We've begged a little too long.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to explain how it worked.
Oh yes, thank you. Thank you for that. It's a good thing to explain every so often.
Yeah, because it happens.
And we occasionally do bonus content. We went a bit long today, so there might end up being some bonus content.
Bonus!
But the...
probably the Zodiac.
We don't do it all that often, but I do plan on making that a regular thing. But that's only available to our awesome patrons.
Yeah, and if you're a patron and you want something, let us know. If you want bonus content, if you want downloadable... wallpapers that I could whip up and GIMP
that I already made
or something, or the sort, you know, stuff like that. Just let us know.
Yeah. And we'll be back next week with an interview with a local comedian who grew up in the Baha'i faith.
Welcome, brother. Welcome. All right.
To the family of Baha'i.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.